yes, you'd be bloody well nervous when you're putting something out that's close to the line. I always knew that I was doing my job right when I get a call from my mother back home in Connemara telling me that someone was giving out to her about what Paddy Power did.
This is episode 88 of the Entrepreneur Experiment podcast with me, Gary Fox, and this is your Thursday interview. And today we're joined by Phelim from Splunk PR. Phelim is the marketing / PR genius behind some of the greatest marketing stunts you've seen in Ireland in the last 10 to 15 years. He was the brains behind Jobless Paddy. He then went to Paddy Power and was the brains behind many of their superb marketing stunts. And he now works for himself with Splunk PR, where again, he's doing his magic with the likes of Now TV and their Hurley versus Hurl campaign. We talk about Phelim's journey from Jobless Paddy to one of the greatest PR minds in Ireland. We talk about his journey from employee to entrepreneur. And we also get Phelim to break down the thinking and the creative process and the planning that goes into getting your brand into national and international media. We get super practical towards the end as well. So if you are a small business owner and you want to figure out how to get your brand or your product into local, national, international media, Phelim basically gives us the goodies and gives us a free marketing masterclass towards the end. So hang on till that. Quick few updates before we start off. I'm still doing my momentum challenge. So any of you not familiar, I'm doing exercise every single day for lockdown. So we're well over halfway through now. The end is in sight. And I'm also partnering up with someone on that. So Parallel Nutrition are my nutrition partner for the momentum challenge. So I'd strongly recommend going to the guys, checking out parallelnutrition.ie. Every week, my food is dropped to my door. All I need to do is pop it in the microwave, and it's keeping me really on track. So I'm tracking my macros. It's keeping me fueled, and it's keeping me on track for just making a bit of progress every single day. I felt if I could keep going with the exercise, it would then bleed into the rest of my daily chores and my job and my career. So highly recommend that. I'll also think I might do a momentum challenge for January. So if anyone's up for that, get in touch. Let me know if it's a good idea or not. Maybe we'll all get together and do a momentum challenge. We'll pick something to do together every day for January, just so people can kick into the new year with something positive to happen. Secondly, I want to have a quick chat about the community that I talked about last week. I fed out this idea on the Idea Lab last week, and I got an unbelievably good reaction. So basically, I'm going to create a private community for entrepreneurs in Ireland based around the podcast. So for listeners of the podcast, because it's superb for listeners of the podcast who get in touch with me and we can have one-on-one chats, I want to be able to create that in a more formal environment. The biggest thing that I benefit from is being surrounded by other entrepreneurs. So I want to create that for the Entrepreneur Experiment community. It'll be launching probably Jan-Feb time. It'll be a paid community. There will be a charge to join because I believe people don't value what's free. And you also, I want to kind of set a bar high for people who want to join because it's going to be a high level group. And I don't mean that you have to be a high level entrepreneur, but it's going to be delivering high value. I want it to be not just another networking group. I want it to be something that people genuinely help each other out on and further each other. I have this informally with a lot of my friends where we help each other, but I want to create a formal network. So if you want to be on the waitlist and find out how you can join, we're already halfway towards the waitlist number. So I'm going to kick this off. Once the waitlist reaches 100 people, I'm going to kick this off. So we're already at 50 people on the waitlist. Get your name on the waitlist. Go to MrGaryFox.com, sign up for the waitlist. And now on with today's show. Phelim, welcome to the pod.
Thanks a million, Gary. Thanks for having me.
I was going to make an attempt at the second name there, at the surname, but no, we'll, you can give us a full intro to your name and the company name.
Yeah, sure. So it's Phelim Ochanumra. As you might expect, it's I have great fun with that when I go to Starbucks. I suppose I am the founder. Well, I am a one-man band, so it's not much of a founding at this stage, but of Splunk PR, which is my own boutique PR agency, and I'm on the go now for about a year.
Excellent. I think you've, as we go through the chat, I think people are going to suddenly recognize all the work you've done. I suppose that's the hard part. A lot of stuff you do is kind of not in the background, but you know, people mightn't associate you with the work because it's often done for clients. But possibly the first time we crossed paths, I've known you for a good few years, possibly the first time we crossed paths was when you popped up in a very, very, very viral campaign you did for yourself.
Yeah, that's right. Well, I suppose that it all stems back to 2011. God, almost 10 years ago now. So a much younger looking and a chap with a lot more hair than me had just come home from Australia. And I mean, I used to work in insurance, Gary, which isn't exactly the funnest industry in the world. And, you know, as glad as I was to have a job, I mean, I just wasn't suited for it. And I, you know, this is back in 2008, 2009, when the country was struggling. So I made myself a promise that I'd never again work a day in my life in a job that I didn't absolutely love. So I went to Australia, was an entertainment coordinator for a hostel, which involved like taking out backpackers and getting them drunk. So I was kind of like Van Wilder, but with a higher BMI index. And I did that for a year, which is great crack. But well, that's great for 25. You know, it's not something you want to do long term, to be quite honest. But what I did discover about myself, I suppose, while I was out in Australia, was I had a bit of a knack for creativity, and that it was something that I really, really wanted to use in my professional life going forward. And now the problem was I had no experience in anything along the lines of advertising or PR or anything like that. And it wasn't exactly plentiful for jobs at the time either. So after about 9 to 10 months of doing the exact same thing as everyone else, I decided to have a bit of a roll of the dice, and I took out a billboard to advertise myself for work, which was the Jobless Paddy campaign, I suppose, a lot of people would have heard of, I suppose.
Where was the billboard?
It was down at Marion Road, and like everyone was very complimentary of the location of it, to be honest. Like everyone was like, oh, it's great. And to be honest, I didn't have a choice. It was all they had available for me. So it was potluck. To be honest, it took a good few phone calls to convince JC DeCow to allow me to do it as well. But thankfully they did. And I suppose that you had a bit of trouble there with my name at the start. So I needed to give my, you know, go down the Bonner route and give myself an alias. So I needed to decide something. I suppose I wanted it to be clear that I was desperate for work and Irish. The name Brian McFadden was already taken, so I decided to go with Jobless Paddy.
What you kind of alluded to what my next question would possibly have been. How did you convince them to give you a billboard? You obviously paid for it, but how did you kind of ring them up and go, "Hi lads, odd one for you."
Yeah, I mean, they did not entertain me at the start. They really didn't. I think I would have spoken to them 4 or 5 times, and they started ignoring me. And I just rang someone else in the office, like, you know, and she put me back on to the main boss again. And, you know, I just basically pleaded with her, to be honest. I pulled on the heartstrings and I said, look, like, you take phone calls here every single day about people trying to sell products and to use your media as a vessel for that. What I'm asking you to do is I'm asking you to help me to use your media to help me get a job. And what's more, I'm actually going to pay you for it. So she basically just said, fine. And she said, you're going to be wasting your money, to be honest. But I was sold down this route at this stage. Thankfully went up. But the worst, I had about a month lead-in time as well. So I was chomping at the bit for when it would kick off.
What was the idea behind the billboard? What did you think that was going to do?
To be honest, I suppose the big thing, the more I thought about it, like CVs, what do you do when you're looking for a job? You basically go online and you Google, right, how do I write a CV? How do I write a cover letter? What do I put down there? And everyone's getting the same advice from the same sources and everything like that. And I suppose when I just thought about it logically, I was like, how the hell am I supposed to stand out if I'm doing the exact same thing as everyone else? And I suppose this is a principle that I live by with my clients nowadays. So I said, instead of telling people, you know, about my abilities and what I'm capable of, why not just show them? That way, you know, they're taking less of a bet on you because you've actually already proven the fact that you can do the job that they're advertising. So that was my thinking behind it, that I kind of showcase my skill set as opposed to telling people about it. And the idea for the billboard came very, very quickly. I kind of, it's me with the hurl, with the suitcase, looking out beyond the horizon at all these kind of iconic landmarks from different countries where the Irish diaspora would traditionally go. And to be honest, I got so much help from people. I mean, the Still Photography Club, someone came down to get me the quality enough image that I could use. Michelle designed that in Kildare, helped me out with the graphic design of it. And the illustrations, I found a guy in the Philippines to do that for me for like 200 quid in that on a freelance website, which is great. So yeah, I mean, all in, it was about just over €2,000. And there's not much else left at the time, but
that's chunky.
Yeah, it worked out.
What was the goal? What did you want to get out of it? What kind of job did you want to get out of it? Or did you have someone in mind that when you're designing, because it's slick, it's a slick billboard. I'll put it in the show notes, but like there's a lot going on in the billboard, but yet it's very simple and very clear. Had you someone in mind when you were designing it?
No one in particular. I mean, the big thing for me was that I just wanted a role that I would get the opportunity to use that creative side myself. Because I felt that if I got that opportunity, that I would flourish in that area. The most important criteria that I put in front of me was, number one, that I wanted a role that I was going to learn absolutely loads in, and two, that I was going to enjoy every single day. I mean, look, we all get PTSD, I suppose, when we go into Glen Road time on Sunday evening. And you know, getting up in the morning, yes, it's annoying, but I never wanted to get that Sunday fear again. And I suppose the only annoyance I wanted waking up in the morning was that I had to get out of my, that I was maybe a bit tired and not dreading getting out of the bed to go to something that I hated. And to be honest, I was very, very lucky in how things turned out.
Where did you get that confidence to blow $2,000 on a billboard?
I have no idea, Gary, you know, I don't know. It probably tethers the line between confidence and stupidity, to be honest. And I put it somewhere in the middle, but thankfully it worked out.
So what happens when you, to bring me to the day, right? I want to go back to the day the billboard went up, because I know that has to be burned in your memory.
Yeah, it was an absolutely bizarre day, to be honest. So I stuck off the billboard. I kind of went out there and got a picture of it, and I put it up on Twitter and on Facebook and all of that. And I didn't think much of it. I was up in Dublin, like, you know, I was living in Galway at the time, back home in Connemara, and came up for the day, got a taxi down there. Taxi driver loved it, and he wouldn't take any money off me.
Really?
Yeah. No, it was great. And then I went to meet my friend Anne, actually, you know, who I'd lived with. And basically, within a couple of hours, I started getting all these emails through from journalists at the Times, the Journal. And, you know, once it went up on I think it was the Journal, which was only on the road for a couple of months, I think, at that stage, I got a phone call from Will Goodbody in RTE. And basically, they were looking to come and film me, and I was there with my friend Dan in a house in Rathmines. And you mind if RTE come around? Like, she was like, what? You know, so it was absolutely gas now, to be honest. Like, you know, and
had you seeded that though? Had you gone to the Journal and all those outlets and gone, look, something cool might be bubbling up here?
This was the thing. I mean, I mean, this is my career now, and this is what I do. But at the time, I suppose I wouldn't have had a great understanding of how the media would run, but I did the usual of tagging people under the tweet and stuff like that, and doing the hunger tweeting and all sorts of stuff to try and attract attention, and that did help, but I didn't expect it to explode like it did. And the funniest thing was, I think, like, you know, I was literally back to back. It was exhausting, to be honest, doing interviews non-stop for that whole day. And then I got a phone call, I remember, I think it was, I must have been for 48 hours afterwards, but I knew it went mad, because a mate of mine just sent me a text, and he was like, you're on the front page of the Sydney Morning Herald. And I was like, what?
No way.
It was absolutely crazy. Like, you know, so it went totally global. And then I kind of had to set about set about actually getting a job. And that was exhausting in itself as well, because, like, you know, it went from media interviews to like back to back interviews. So I was, you know, and these are the days before Zoom calls or anything like that. So they're all face to face all over Dublin. I was just traipsing around the city.
So what happened? Did people reach out to you going, here, we like what you're doing, come in for a chat? Or did you then go, hey, look what I've done, can I apply for this job?
No, everyone came to me, which was great, to be honest. And yeah, it was a lot of fun now, to be honest. I was sailing through interviews at the end of it. I mean, I was probably the most seasoned job interviewer in Ireland for that brief period in time, you know, knocking out about 40 or 50 in the space of 2 weeks.
Wow.
You know, yeah, I had my weaknesses down. I had everything down, Gary. Like, you know, it was all them tricky questions were just rolling off the tongue. You'd swear I was like, you know, I was as polished as Ryan Tuberty rolling this stuff off. But and then I suppose, you know, the offers started coming in then afterwards. And I went from a famine to a feast. And Paddy Power was the one I chose in the end, and I was delighted to have done it, to be honest.
How did you choose? Because it sounds like there was a good few offers.
Yeah, there were, but I think what it was with Paddy Power was I was always a huge fan of the brand, and you know, I remember being brought in on the first day. I met Ken Robertson, who was the first ever head of mischief in Paddy Power, and who was also my boss for many years. And as much as I hate to admit it, a bloody good mentor to me, and still to this day. Really hope he doesn't listen to this. But
I'll be tagging him. Don't you worry.
The thing was, I was always a big fan of the brand, and when I went in there and I met Ken and Paddy, and you know, we had our little interview chat for about half an hour or so, and then there was some dead air time, like, you know, about 20 minutes, and I was just a fanboy. You know, I was asking them for all the stories behind like the Cheltenham sign, and you know, then they changed the Tongan rugby player Epic Tiona's name to Paddy Power and stuff like that, and I was getting all these anecdotes from you know, the kind of background behind them. And you know, I was leaving the place with stars in my eyes, to be honest. I thought it was like Willy Wonka's chocolate factory, but for like shitstern, which just sounded really, really tempting to me. And it comes back to exactly what I said to you at the start then. I wanted a role where I felt that I was going to learn an absolute load, and that I was going to really, really enjoy. And I suppose what hooked it for it was, you know, again, you know, coming back to how bloody seasoned I was as an interviewer here. When I met Barney Evans, who was the marketing director at the time, I asked him, you know, why should I work for you in all, you know, with all this misplaced confidence? But the one thing he said was like, you know, you'll get to work right under Paddy Power and Ken Robertson, who are the two best PR people in the UK and Ireland. And you get to learn off them. And I was like, yeah, screw it. No brainer. Let's do this. Mm.
Even with the kind of the tone of your billboard and even the way you've kind of put it up, it was Paddy Power-esque in its stature. That's kind of why I asked you, where are you targeting someone in particular? Because it is something that they would do.
Oh man, I mean, I suppose if you were to give me a choice, they certainly would have been up there. I was always just a huge fan of the brand and what they were doing at the time. And it's a choice I certainly don't regret. I had a great time there.
So what happened? You went in, and what were we doing?
I went in as a PR executive, and I was completely and utterly clueless, to be quite honest. I got given my computer, and the first thing I did was I Googled how to write a press release. So yeah, I mean, there was a very, very steep learning curve early on, and thankfully I managed to weather the initial months. And of course you get into a flow of things then, and you understand how things work. And again, I just decided to be a sponge and listen to absolutely everything that was said to me by those around me, because like I said, I mean, this marketing team is just chock full of talent, and it still is, and it always has been. And you know, I've learned so much from everyone I've ever worked with in there, you know, whether they be I'm reporting into them, or whether they're reporting to me, or whether on the same level. So yeah, it was brilliant.
Can you remember back your first win in there, your first kind of one where you're like, you had the idea again and you were like, oh, I'm going to pitch this to the lads now.
Oh God, I'm trying to think. I mean, yeah, kind of, I remember we did the first one I got out the door, and it took me a while, to be honest. Like, you know, I'd say it would have been 9 to 10 months of ferocious pitching. And, you know, I mean, Ken was great in that, you know, he offered, do you know those little barriers they put up when kids are bowling? Like, he was essentially like that for me. You know, every time I strayed a bit too far, he was like, no, you've got this wrong because of that. And I was like, okay, now I realize where I'm going wrong. And I suppose first one would have been when we for the Euros when we decided to give away like free petrol to everyone who was going to the Euros to support Ireland, fueling fans bands we called it. And that went down quite well. But again, I mean, that's the thing, and I still find that to this day. It's not easy to get a brand, and Paddy Power in the face of it, it does seem very laddish. It does seem very potty humor and all that. But when you scratch the surface and you see, you know, what it is that they're delivering, there's always a level of sophistication there. Mm. And it, you know, I mean, the thing we all, you know, so it's incredibly difficult to strike the right tone for a brand unless you've been working with them for some time, and I'm still, you know, I'm still finding that, but it's a really, really enjoyable process to learn about a brand.
How did it work in terms of, I'm fascinated by the creative process, especially about companies like Paddy Power and yourselves. Like, what I just imagine you all sitting around like on giant beanbags playing Xbox and just coming up with mad ideas. Like, how did it actually work? Like, describe kind of your day to day and your week to week.
Oh God. I mean, like every creative, I suppose creative house or anything like that. I mean, ideas come from everywhere. You know, we have agencies pitch to us. We look at stuff internally. We have internal brainstorming sessions. We get people out in from externally to brainstorm as well. And some ideas then just literally were like water cooler stuff where someone, you know, there'd be a big story going on and someone might comment on it. And then next thing it's like, hold on, there's the embers of something there. And then you start an email trail. And by the time you get to the end of it, it's very difficult to say whose idea it was, because like about five or six people have had some input, which will have made it better. But it literally is just, I mean, the thing I loved about Paddy Power is like, you know, I mean, it was never a case of let's plan for the big stuff. It was like there was pressure on you every single day. Like, you know, get media coverage today. I mean, I don't know if there's another PR role like it in the country. You know, where the first thing I would have to do every single morning would be, you know, open the papers, go online, see what the big stories are, and try to find a way that we can kind of trust ourselves into that narrative. And that went for everything, whether it was politics, showbiz, you know, obviously sport, and all the rest of it. You know, no story was out of bounds. And I suppose that's the beauty of bookmaking as well, is that, you know, bookmaking is a game of opinions. And when there's a big story, there's opinions left, right, and center. And, you know, you have a right to play in so many different areas, which few industries do. I mean, you'll see now we're running up to, yeah, for example, like, you know, Valentine's Day. I mean, there's an obvious crossover there with the likes of Dairy Milk, or, you know, people who sell roses or anything like that. And they have a right to play in that area. But Paddy Power, because the nature of the brand and the nature of the industry, they can almost trust themselves into any of the conversations that are going on. But I love the fact that there was pressure on us to do stuff every single day. But again, there were the big carrots as well, like the Euros, like the Rugby World Cup or anything like that, that we would plan a lot ahead and get the big whoppers in line ahead of them.
On the day-to-day thing, like, creativity is a tough thing to do. Like, how did you get the juices going every single day? I know you're saying you went down, you looked at the papers, but like, to try and search yourself into stories at such speed as well, that's what always kind of blew me away about Paddy Power and brands like that. That they're able to inject themselves so fast into the narrative. Like, how did you guys do that?
What Paddy Power have, what few of the brands have, is they have buy-in and they have trust of everyone above them. And that is an absolutely huge asset. I mean, I know you were at an event I spoke at before, and I kind of mentioned the way opportunities are kind of like steam, in that they're there for a very, very short period of time and you have to jump on top of them. And if some idea gets caught up in a bureaucratic process, it's never going to happen. I mean, one example was we were at Cheltenham one year, and you know, I woke up anyway. It was the Wednesday at Cheltenham, and you know, we're in the WhatsApp group, and a lot of the guys are discussing the fact that some Aston Villa players had showed up the day beforehand, and they were peeing into glasses and throwing them off the side. And that box was about two boxes down from where our box was, and basically, you know, within a few minutes, we were like, "How about we set up?" Like in the WhatsApp group, it was like, "How about we set up a pee free zone in our box?" And I was like, "Right, that's actually a brilliant idea." So I was the man on the ground. So I got onto design right away. They mocked up something. I found a printer, and I found a taxi driver in Cheltenham that was happy to work for me. So he got me designs. I ran straight up to the box, handed them off to Paddy, and I grabbed the photographer from the Sun to come down and take pictures of Paddy. And another wonderful one was remember Stephen Hunt was actually a guest of ours in the box. Mm. And Stephen Hunt pops over and he's like, "Oh geez, do you mind if I jump into the photos?" And Paddy's like, no, come on, you're welcome." So there's a picture of like Paddy Power and Stephen Hunt within about 3 hours of the idea happening. Being in the box and like, you know, having free zone signs on our box. And I suppose that's just one example. Like another one was a colleague of mine, you know, Lewis, he pointed out to the fact there was a Costa Coffee were found to have, they were found to have our feces, traces of feces were found in their coffee. And basically, he had this idea, let's find a Paddy Power right beside a Costa Coffee and let's put up signs on our shop that says, you know, "Don't gamble next door, we won't shit in your coffee." And, you know, within about an hour, retail had found one. And again, like, you know, that was all turned around in a matter of 3 hours. Okay. It's, I mean, there are companies that take a number of days to approve a social media post, whereas there was that much trust and, you know, you had so much buy-in from the likes of design, from the likes of legal, from the likes of, I suppose not alone buy-in, but the actual will to go and do it, that would allow you to get this stuff done. And of course, you know, the less time has passed after an event, the more newsworthy things are. So, you know, if you can get this stuff out, you know, while the media are still searching for news angles where they need maybe an extra 100 or 200 words to pad out an article on it, you're doing them a huge favor. And that will drive coverage. But as well as that, it's when everyone's talking about this stuff, say on WhatsApp or that, you're making content that's so shareable to members of the general public. And if that's the case, it's just irresistible to the media and they'll jump on it.
And then in terms of like your longer plan stuff, so the Euros, your Cheltenhams, you know, how far in advance did you start planning and what was the process?
Oh God. I mean, I suppose say for something like the Euros, you'd be looking, you'd start getting the briefs out to agencies and, you know, brainstorming amongst yourselves probably around, you know, that August, that September, maybe even after Cheltenham that year. Or once you know what countries are involved. Mm. And then it's a case of just refining them, of getting them together, of like, you know, I mean, so much planning goes into these things. It's not, they don't just happen. I mean, you know, I remember the one where, what was it, during the World Cup when we pretended to cut down the rainforest. And again, that was Harry Dromey, who an English lad in the team. He suggested that originally, and then, you know, it was kind of like, oh geez, but you couldn't really do it. And I think it was Stuart Kenny, the founder, just said, "Why don't you just pretend to have done it?" And it just went absolutely crazy. Like, you know, everyone was going wild online, and you know, the mad genius of Paddy Power Social, Michal Nagel, he played a blinder on that one. He put up a tweet saying, "Calm down, guys, we haven't cut down that much." Waited until he saw it screenshotted and then deleted it. And of course, like, you know, everyone was like, "Ah, we got you." You know, they're treating us this big gotcha moment. We got a screenshot where it was like they literally just played it into his hands. That was some crack, like, you know. But again, I mean, something like that, when you're investing, like, you know, close to six figure sums on a campaign. I mean, they're certainly not turned around on a whim. But they do, you know, in a lot of cases, they do involve red tape and a bit of trepidation as well from a legal point of view.
This brings me nicely on to, how do you know how far is too far?
It's difficult. It's really, really difficult. And I suppose the way I would have categorized it in Paddy Power is, you know, everyone's saying, like, is there a line? There is no line. There 100% was a line. But you want to be really, really, really close to it. Mm-hmm. And once you're trying to tread that line as closely as we did, you're inevitably going to fall over it from time to time. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I mean, that's, but you be very careful. I mean, one thing that Paddy Power do brilliantly is when they do cause outrage, they don't cause outrage amongst their own customer base. You know, there's a real interesting contrast there. So say, you know, the stuff that would have driven all the ASA complaints, like the Oscar Pistorius advert or anything like that, they never led to that many customer account closures or anything like that. But from time to time, an innocuous tweet taking the piss out of a football team would have led to a hell of a lot more. Mm. And that's I suppose one thing that we're painfully aware of is, like, when we're doing this stuff, if you don't piss off your customer base and, you know, let the outrage from people who are never going to actually be your customers, let the outrage from those people fuel the media storm and fuel the storm on Twitter. And that will work in your favor. But that's genuinely, there are tweets that you've probably never heard of or never seen in a news article that would have led to more account closures than any of the most stuff that seemed more controversial.
That's genius. Don't piss off your customer base and let the others fuel. That's genius, because I've often wondered that, because I was like, because you guys did it so well. You'd always kind of go, oh, you'd always have that moment where you're like, oh, you know, that little kind of like, oh, lads. And then you're like, that's brilliant. You know,
yeah,
I always kind of wonder what the process was thinking, kind of going, right, the line, where is the line? Because it must be, do you think now it's much harder? Because,
well, I think it's probably harder to tread that line, but it still can be done. It still definitely can be done. And I mean, you know, we're all nice people at the end of the day, and it's not nice to piss everyone off. But another kind of, I suppose, acid test that you'd always have is that if you were entirely comfortable with something, then it probably wasn't right for the brand. So you have to think, rather than with your personal hat on, than with your brand hat on the whole time. And I mean, you know, yes, you'd be bloody well nervous when you're putting something out that's close to the line. But I suppose I always knew that I was doing my job right when I get a call from my mother back home in Connemara telling me that someone was giving out to her about what Paddy Power did. So yeah, I knew we were hitting the sweet spot when something like that happened.
Do you have one campaign that you kind of look back on and go, that was just perfection?
Yeah, I mean, there's a few I quite enjoyed. I really enjoyed, like, just some of the kind of smaller, more tactical ones that are just so simple that really worked and were a lot of fun. I mean, I suppose when England came to play Ireland back in 2015, I think it was the first time they were over in, like, since the infamous game. So we just bubble wrapped one of our shops, and, you know,
I remember that. That was brilliant.
Called it the designated England supporter shop, which was good crack in itself. I mean, another one as well would have been that I really enjoyed working on. And there was a few of us involved in this one we just kind of had a conversation amongst ourselves. It was during that time when the immigrants were coming over from Dover on the back of the trucks, and, you know, we're kind of making the point that, isn't it gas how the public is so welcoming to all the foreign sportsmen that play for England and British teams and the likes? Yes, you know, these types of refugees aren't welcome at all. And, you know, from that, you know, came an advert that was, we had a truck and it was like immigrants jump in the back, but only if you're good at sport. Now, to be honest, we're in a lot of cases when we were doing stuff like this, the idea was to kind of come down on the right side of the argument, but just do it in a really stupid and clumsy way. And, you know, having a pot shot at the bigots there more so than anything. But I suppose people took it that we were doing it for nefarious purposes. So much so the Guardian wrote an op-ed on the actual advert saying that we had ruined a perfectly good argument. But again, we're never going to spoon feed anyone the intention behind any of the advertising or anything like that, because that, you know, I suppose that would come across as defending or anything. We would put it out there and let it be interpreted and let people battle it out as well online, because that again does feed it. So if you can kind of tether that line as well, it can only help.
And then when the time came to leave Paddy Power, what was your thought process?
Yeah, God, I mean, let's... I suppose the merger happened with Betfair, and I suppose there was a bit of a gear shift, and the demand of someone in my role became somewhat different, if I'm quite honest. And I didn't adapt to change. If I'm fair, I kind of, you know, kept trying to do things exactly as I always had. And to be quite honest, you know, I suppose I wasn't able to affect as much as I could, and I wasn't able to get stuff out the door because I was doing that. And I did become a bit apathetic towards it. And, you know, yes, I was frustrated at the time, but with the benefit of hindsight, you know, I put more of the blame on myself, to be quite honest. I mean, I was being paid to, you know, the role changed, but I certainly didn't. And I was there to answer a brief. And I suppose, I kind of struggled for a while to get things out the door. And I mean, from a personal point of view, what fulfills me is, and this is so pretentious, but I need a creative outlet. I really, really do. And I need to, I just don't feel fulfilled if I'm doing spreadsheets or writing briefs or anything like that. And having not been able, I suppose, to do it as I would have liked, I felt the time was to move on. But I mean, like I said as well, I mean, I've got loads of friends back there. I still do bits here and there for them. I get briefs. It was the best crack ever for 6.5 years. I mean, there were genuinely times where you're just laughing your hole off and thinking, how in God's name am I getting paid to be here? It's like what the hell, what I'm doing right now, I would do for absolute free. And, you know, it was such crack. And I don't think there'll ever be a job like it again. But it was a hell of an experience.
Well, you've created it for yourself. Now, I think the creative outlet thing, I think knowing your strengths, I think that's a sign of any good entrepreneur, someone who's a bit of experience. Like at the start, you know, you talked about your ideas and your career when you were starting off. But I think when you get into it, you suddenly know your strengths and being able to say, yeah, you know what, I'm just super creative. I just want to do that. And I don't want to do spreadsheets. And I think that's the brilliant thing about being an entrepreneur and starting your own business. So how did you make that jump though? How did you leave and go, ooh, I actually want to work for myself?
Yeah, well, it took another while, to be quite honest. And I suppose coming back to what I just said, I mean, I pretty much ignored that early on. And I mean, you know, I suppose the lessons in life aren't linear. And what I knew when I was like 25, 26, I had probably forgotten when I was like 33, 34. And I mean, I took a great job with William Grant & Sons, who own Tullamore Dew, Hendrix, and I can't speak highly enough of them. I mean, they're an absolutely amazing company to work for. They are, without a doubt, the nicest bunch of people I have ever worked for. But again, the role I had in there was amazing, but it just was not for me. And again, you know, it was very, very admin heavy, very, very kind of, not heavy on the creative side of it. And I kind of thought to myself, it's like, do you know what? I think I think what you have to do here is there isn't another Paddy Power. The right role, the role that you love isn't out there. The only way that you can get that is by creating it yourself. So I decided to go bite the bullet and go out myself with Splunk.
I love that. You just created your own dream role. Like that's the dream. I think that's the beauty of being an entrepreneur. It's just, you get to do what you want. You get to create your dream role. And if you're any good, which you are, like you're able to do that and then focus on what you're good at. So bring me on the journey of Splunk. What was the What was the process? How did you, in your head, go, do you know what, this we're going to do? Bring me back to the very start.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's just a bit of a shot in the dark. And to be honest, I mean, I'm still learning the whole time, Gary. I mean, I am, you know, I've got 10 years of PR and creative experience for me. So the work is absolutely no bother to me, but I've literally only been, I struggle to call myself an entrepreneur at times, but because it's just myself. But I mean, I've only been working for myself now for a year. And I remember someone who has been very good to me, who shall remain nameless, but who again, I consider a mentor. While I was going through some stuff with him, he basically says, look, and I'm going to put this in language that your boggerhead can understand. You are an inter-county PR man, but by God, you're a junior B businessman. Now, I think I might have gotten myself up to about junior A or intermediate level intermediate level now in terms of business. But again, you know, I mean, while the actual work of it is grand for me, I suppose that's only about 40 or 50% of it. You know, what was new to me was, you know, pitching was like, you know, like chasing new business. Even servicing accounts, like, you know, I mean, when different clients demand different styles of service. There's no one size fits all. There's like everyone has a different way of reporting things and all that. And that takes getting used to. So I think basically the idea behind it as well was roll it back to a bit when I was jobless Paddy, in that let's just work on stuff you enjoy. Park the financial side of a rental. Let's get in your feet. Let's do it by doing the work you enjoy. Let's do it by getting great work out there and build a business, or build your client base through that. So that's what it's been like. Yeah.
So what was the first steps? What you do to kind of get your first couple of clients? Or always, that's the bit I always love digging into with people, because I think that's the bit that stops most people from actually starting. Is like, oh, I just didn't know how to start. And even experienced people are like, I just didn't know. I'd never done sales, or you know. So what was your first day one? You're sitting down at a blank laptop. What did you do?
Yeah, I mean, God, first thing, I suppose some people networked me in with a few clients. So I kicked off with GMHD.ie, who are an insurance broker down there in Kerry, and Explorium as well, where some former former Paddy Power people had set that up, the National Sports and Science Centre out there in Sandyford. And I was doing some white label work as well. And on top of that as well, I managed to get in with Cage Warriors, who were doing some fight cards in Ireland that year. And you know, there was some other mixers that came along the way, and it was going, I mean, like you know as well as anyone, Gary, it started off pretty slowly. I wasn't exactly, you know, there's a lot of meetings that went nowhere and all sorts of stuff like that. But when I would have met you back in March, I remember actually saying to you, I was like, no, literally my workflow is about to explode. I've got the next 4 months sorted. You know, keep an eye out for me, because I got some great work in the
famous hubris coming up.
Oh man, it was like, yeah, honestly, it was record scratch moment then, to be quite honest. I think it was the Thursday after lockdown was announced, and everything, a lot of what I had planned, I mean, you know, the likes of Explorium, Stillgarden, Cage Warriors obviously can't have any cards at the minute, that they were to have four this summer or last summer. And of course, there was a few other projects where the rug was just pulled under me. It was tough to take, to be honest. But I decided to power through it. I remember I got a call from a recruiter about a role, and it was kind of one of these, like, you know, Robert Frost, two roads diverging in yellow wood, and I was like, do you know what, screw it, no, I'm not going to go for it. I'm gonna weather the storm and try to get through this. And thankfully, you know, I mean, yes, you know, lockdown, the first lockdown really wasn't fun, and you know, yes, there were sleepless nights, and yes, it was difficult, and it wasn't all sunshine and roses, and I do have a positive demeanor in that, but it did lead me to question a lot of things. But I suppose everyone's ambition was halted for that period, and it wasn't a reflection on any of us that things didn't exactly go to plan. So thankfully, managed to get through that, and things have really, really picked up since then.
When people come to you, what do they say? What expectation do they have of what you can do for them?
Well, I suppose my niche is I'm lucky enough in that I consider this a really, really good thing. There's some brilliant PR professionals in Ireland, and that requires me to be really on my game. So I frame myself as a guy who can do the cookie cutter stuff, you know, your press launch, your media day, the product launches, anything like that, getting an ambassador on board, a bit of social stuff, you know, yes, by all means, I can do that. But at the same time, I am going to throw in some daft stuff that will help you get your brand personality across to the customers, and that will actually help you stand out as well. And I mean, that's why I love that one of my first clients was insurance. And I mentioned to you at the start of it that I had worked in insurance and I felt it was the most boring industry in the world. And I was like, this is a brilliant challenge for me. If I can make insurance interesting, I can make absolutely anything interesting. And, you know, the great thing about the guys down there in Kerry is, like, you know, they're open for a bit of crack and they're well up for having a laugh. So, like, stuff I would have done with them was, I suppose, when Game of Thrones, the last series, I would have priced up the cost of the rebuild cost of Winterfell Castle ahead of the zombie attack. And, you know, another one as well that I was working on this is now obviously been put on the long finger, but I did it previously. So I got The Rock. They were launching Hobbs and Shaw, which was part of the Fast and Furious franchise. But what I did was I watched all the Fast and the Furious with The Rock, marked down everything that would have gotten him penalty points, everything, you know, all his shunts and bumps and all his write-offs. And we basically got all that data and saw how much would it cost to, like, insure him on a 2014 Focus in Ireland. on a car that would cost a fraction of the cost, you'd be looking at about 37,000 given the data we had in them. And it's just, you know, I love the challenge of that. And I particularly love working on smaller budgets and coming up with things that are just that, just that little bit different, as well. You know, so it's small budgets really get the juices flowing as well. It's actually a lot easier when someone tells you, oh, we only have a small bit for this, as opposed to just come up with something and we'll find the money. So I really, really enjoy that side of the creative process.
That's a mad process to go through all the Fast and the Furious. Where does that even start, Phelim? Like, where do you, like, I'm just fascinated by the creativity of people like yourselves who just have this, like, whiteboard moment where they're, like, sketching this out, going, okay, I can draw on this, this, and this, and this, and this. And you can bring it to a narrative and go, I know that's going to play well in the media. So where does that even start?
Yeah, I'm going to sound like a fortune cookie now. But the ideas we need, Gary, are literally all around us.
I'm going to clip this and just play this at the start.
Super, super. There you go. There's my almost famous moment. But no, the truth be told, I mean, I think we can get really, like, when you're working in a marketing department, you can get really, really caught up in your brand, and that is so much important. I mean, I just think back at the bookmaking industry where we, like, say it's the Masters weekend now this weekend, and, you know, that would be a big one for us. And it was like, oh my God, Bud Sports have gone 9 places, but they're only going 1/5 of the price. Oh my God, which, look at this, William Hill have gone 8 places in there and we're only 7 places. Oh my God. And you're so aware of what you and your competition are doing. I mean, you know, we see broadband ads all the time. I couldn't tell you what freaking the megabytes or whatever the hell is on offer for them. But everyone in those marketing departments can. So we get caught up in our own brand so much. And what I suppose what it is a good reminder is that, you know, what you're offering probably isn't at the tip of everyone's tongue. So it's far easier to get your brand involved in a conversation that is already happening, as opposed to trying to create one yourself. So that's, you know, very much the kind of Paddy Power mentality, in that you're finding find the crossover and a Venn diagram of what's in the news, how can we get involved, and going between the two. One I did this week with Now TV, and again, you know, I have to, I just loved working with them, with Sharon and Mick in there. And again, I genuinely saw this as a small little tactical thing, and they came back to me and were like, no, we see this as bigger, go back, build it. And it was a real collaborative effort from the whole lot of us. And it's great to work with teams that actually make you a hell of a lot better. And I definitely feel it out of that. But we did a poll on whether it's called a hurley or a hurl. And I mean, the idea of this just came from people, Cork people, berating me for calling it a hurl in their presence, and me seeing a bit of it on Twitter. And, you know, we put it out there. We got 25,000 votes on it. That's 25,000 people engaging with a brand on a bespoke website that we set up. And again, it drummed up plenty of media coverage as well. I just sent out the results there today, so hopefully a lot more to come. But again, that's the one thing I would always say, is that try and find a crossover with your brand to something that is going to be that is going to be talked about far and wide. You know, whether that's a political scandal, whether that's the All-Ireland final, you know, whether that's a big movie that's coming out, or an absolutely iconic thing. So that's kind of the thought process that goes into it. It's that simple, to be honest, Gary. It's like, what are people talking about? How can we, what is there any way that we can get our brand involved in a clever way?
That was going to be kind of, we're close to finishing up now, but that was going to be one of my last questions for you, is a lot of startups, especially small startups, struggle to get that attention. You've kind of answered this a little bit already, but what are the mistakes you see smaller brands and smaller companies do?
To be honest, I think they should. I think the media in Ireland are brilliant for supporting small brands. So I think I did this when I met at that event. I think it was for entrepreneurs, and I basically did a presentation on how to do your own PR and avoid hiring someone like me. I think just keep to the basics, and you know, don't fly too close to the sun when you haven't got a history of doing it. You know, I mean, you can't come out with Paddy Power stuff straight off the bat. You have to build a legacy in that, and you have to find your voice, but you have to do it in a manner that will resonate with your customer base. That's something that's very important. But again, from a PR point of view, I think startups, you know, when money is tied in that, just straight up, like, the Irish media are great for supporting you, particularly local media. You know, get in touch with them and see if there's anything they can do for you.
You're too polite to say it. Most of it's boring. Most of it is just a press release about the new product that they've just developed. And, you know, it's okay. You're never this polite. I'm surprised at your bashfulness. But, like, it's just boring. It's self-indulgent. It's like, oh, look, we've created this new product and it does X, Y, and Z. People don't care. People want to know what it can do for them, or why is it funny, or what is it? You know what I mean? So how do they avoid just the dull press release? We've just invented this new product. It's great. Thanks. Our CEO says, da, 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 da.
Well, the one thing I said, I wouldn't cloud that stuff with any wackery or anything like that. You know, when you actually have news, whether that's investment or whether that's launching a new product, that in a lot of cases is a strong enough hook for you to garner media coverage. But when you can delve into the stuff that I've spoken about earlier in terms of, you know, getting your brands to hijack the news agenda, you do that by shunting your brand into the narrative. There's a phrase that someone used to me that summed it up perfectly, in never give someone two dinners when one will do. So there's no point in having, you know, two newsworthy items within a press release. So there's no point in announcing a new product and maybe a stunt along with it. You know, the most important thing in that message is the new product. That's newsworthy. Let that go. But then, you know, when there's nothing else on, by all means, then do the wacky stuff. But don't cloud a news story with another one.
That's great advice. That's brilliant advice. If you, when a small company, or let's just pick a fictional small company that comes to you and going, look, we've only a very small budget, we're literally starting from scratch, we've no real kind of media presence, where would you kind of be pointing them in the first stage? You say, right, just focus on these core essentials to start off with.
Yeah, well, I suppose when you're starting out there, and this is something that's that I'm getting a lot of at the minute, to be quite honest. I mean, you try and guarantee them one or two pieces, so like, you know, give it exclusively to someone else just to get it off the ground, and then maybe look at your traditional launch release or anything like that. But it's yeah, I mean, I don't think you need to reinvent the wheel, to be quite honest. First, you need to get your name out there. And once you're on the road for a while and there's a bit of recognition, then you can start having fun with some things.
Mm. Excellent. What's Blanc up to now? I'm delighted you're able to talk about the Now TV thing, because I think that's very topical at the minute. That'll still be rolling. This interview is going to go out next Thursday, so that'll still be rolling while this is going. So that's good you can talk about that. What other kind of exciting stuff are you cooking up?
Yeah, not too much I can talk about now. There's a lot in the pipeline. I mean, the beauty of it is I did some work there a few weeks ago as well with Guesser.com through Media Players, and that involved some stuff with Michael Cohen, Trump's ex-lawyer, and that. So that's finished up now as well. But I mean, it's been a crazy couple of weeks now, to be honest. We're somewhat getting back to normal. I say we, it's me. Getting back to normal next week, and oh god, I'll tell you what, Gary, I might have some news for you before this goes out.
I'll clip it at the end. I'll clip it and go, this is what he was talking about. Where can people learn a little bit more about yourself and Splunk?
Well, the website's in progress at the minute. That was a victim of COVID as well, I'm afraid. So once the cash dried up, so hopefully I'll have that at the end of it. If you want to get in touch with me, just phelim@splunkpr.com. That's F for Foxtrot, E-I-L-I-M at Splunk, SPLANC.com. Splunk PR, God, I got my own email address wrong.
I'll just put that in the show notes, Phelim. I'll just go ahead and put that in the show notes for you. You're a great follow on Twitter, I have to say. If I was going to recommend someone, I'd say follow you on Twitter first. You're a good man on the tweet machine.
I don't know about that. No, I'd say that, you know, if I hope people like ranting on Galway GAA, because that's pretty much 90% of my content. But by all means, give us a follow.
Phelim, thanks so much for joining us.
No worries, absolute pleasure, Gary.
And that was episode 88. I really enjoyed that chat with Phelim. Had a lot of crack on that one. Get in touch with Phelim. He's Phelim Mac, M-A-C, on Twitter. And then you can just Google him. He's on LinkedIn as well. And if you just Google Splunk PR as well, he'll pop up. I will see you next Monday for the Idea Lab.